welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, December 28th, 2009. I'm Sam Minter. I, as usual, have Yvonne Bo with me. I want to get a couple things out right at the front that I usually put at the end, which is, of course, thanks everybody for joining us. Tell your friends if you like the show. If you have any questions or comments, you can email me at abulsme@abulsme.com. That's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. And we'll address your comments on the next show. Or you can comment on the show when I post it at abulsme.com. Anyway, having said all that, we get back from the holiday, and there have actually been a few news events. And I guess number one is, at least of domestic importance, is that there was a little guy who tried to blow up a plane.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's just domestic importance. I mean, this flight did originate, this was an incoming flight from Europe heading to the U.S.
Well, yeah, no. But my point is, I've actually read a couple of things where people were talking about some of the international coverage. Well, I guess I read something about the Arab coverage of this and how low-key it was, basically because – and also, for that matter, the Obama team's reaction so far has been relatively low-key, which I think is actually we're getting ahead of ourselves, or I'm getting ahead of ourselves. So the basic thing that happened is some guy from Nigeria – caught a flight from Nigeria to
Amsterdam,
and then Amsterdam to Detroit. And when the plane was coming in for a landing towards Detroit, he tried to light an explosive device of some sort. Several of the other passengers noticed some smoke coming up out of him and basically tackled the guy and took care of it. The device fizzled. Apparently, the reports are that if it had succeeded, it would have been large enough to bring down the plane. But there were some technical difficulties in getting it to go off. If there had not been technical difficulties, the passenger jumping them might have not have done much good. But because he didn't quite get it done, the passenger was able to subdue him. And then he was arrested when they landed. And everybody was fine. And... and then we go from there.
So, I mean, the one thing is, so which part do you want to talk about about on this? I mean, one thing is just talking about, you can talk about the security as to why this guy could get through. I mean, but I don't know, where do you want to abort? Well, you talked about the low-key reaction.
Well, here are a couple things. I mean, there are a couple points I want to take out of this. Is that I think... even the reaction there that is there is probably, I don't know. It's relatively low key, but still, I don't know. Here's the bottom line on this kind of thing. I think that every time we have some sort of an event like this, what we are prone to is a huge, huge overreaction. Yes, this could have been really bad, but even if it was really, really bad, even if the guy had brought down the plane and killed everybody on board.
Which I'm still not convinced he could have brought down the plane. Caused damage, yes. Brought down,
Well, I've heard conflicting reports on how powerful the explosives were and whether or not they could have, But regardless, let's say he did bring down the plane. What does that mean? It means... it's a massive, heinous crime. A bunch of people get killed.
Yep.
But we have a tendency, and we have shown time after time since 9/11, that when these kinds of things happen, what happens is a massive, massive overreaction that generally accomplishes nothing, but causing all kinds of inconvenience to all kinds of people and costs all kinds of money and doesn't actually address anything that actually makes anything safer. Oh, and by the way, there's the whole thing that, if you count up all the people killed, let's restrict it to the United States for now. All the Americans killed by terrorist actions in the last decade, it is a tiny number compared to the number of Americans killed by almost anything else you can think of.
That's true.
There have... I saw one quote somewhere not backed up by numbers, but so I'll this may be a slight exaggeration, but you could almost say there have been more Americans killed by their refrigerators falling on them over the last decade than killed by terrorism.
Oh, but I don't know about that. Refrigerators falling on them? Refrigerators. Yeah, I mean, that many people are moving refrigerators and let them fall on them and got killed?
A decent number of people do that, but okay, let's take refrigerators.
Well, I don't think, I don't think 4,000 people got killed by refrigerators falling on them in the last decade. Yeah, I'd be stunned if that's true.
I bet they did. You know, refrigerators are mean
bastards. By a falling fridge?
Refrigerators
but
are mean
bastards.
But how
many people move them in the... Okay.
Forget the refrigerators.
Yes. I understand your point that a lot more people get killed in other
automobile
things.
Crashes, sure. Domestic accidents, people being, you know, just random, ordinary, everyday murder. You know, lightning strikes, definitely.
This whole terrorist thing, and I actually agree with you, but I do understand what you're saying about the crazy overreaction. Lot of security measures to try to stop this, and doing random additional bullshit, like, you know, some of the stuff that we've done over the last 10 years, the kind of shit that we put through for the minimal or no increase in real security.
I'd say
just
no increase. No increase. That's the whole thing. If it was, even if it was minimal, you'd see, I don't know. And like somebody said,
There are certain things that were done in the last decade that have increased security. I will tell you one real one that has had a substantial positive impact. The way that luggage is screened right now, instead of the hand checks, one of the biggest changes that has been done is that machines that can really, really, really scan luggage for really dangerous stuff have been put in place on almost most major airports around the world. Okay. And that, given that kind of equipment, the expense that was spent on it, it would be very, very difficult to really sneak the kind of stuff that you would want to bring down a plane in the cargo hold.
Here's the fundamental thing with all of this. Yes, like you can spend an insane amount of money and make it very, very, very difficult to replicate, yes, you know, Lockerbie. Okay, but you just do something else instead. I mean, that's the whole point.
It goes even beyond that. I'll tell you why, because the fact that that happened didn't just stop terrorist acts, but it also stopped random acts where people accidentally brought dangerous chemicals into cargo holds that had caused fires that had killed, brought down a few planes.
Okay, fine.
One of them did give a summary return on it. But most of them, you're right, Sam, we got very little, if anything at all. Okay? All right? I mean, the return on investment certainly is ridiculously bad. Okay?
Here's the thing now. You know, there are already all kinds of talk about additional increased security measures after this last incident. And actually, it's time for us to take a break. So let's talk about that when we get back, because I think, you know, it's very unclear what is really going to happen now, but it sounds like bullshit. Anyway, let's
just hold. Just one thing. Okay, go ahead. Let's take a break.
We'll be back after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LiganairRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now.
Come on, baby. Let's do the twist. Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this.
I hit the radio dial and tune it up all the way.
I got a dancing in the moonlight.
Classic music for a classic American town. AM 1620. And in stereo at LiganairRadio.com, the Valley.
Okay, we're back. So
I will note that what day is today? 27th. So I've had
28
people travel after this happened. Okay, yeah. The last couple of days, they noticed no real change at the airports.
Right.
Okay. As you mentioned, some of the big overreactions we sometimes have, they notice no major change.
Here are a couple things based on what I've been reading, a number of reports based by travelers. And let me start by saying one of the things that the TSA has actually said is that they are intentionally going to do it differently in different places and change it up on a regular basis so that you can't predict in advance what kind of security measures you might be faced with at a particular airport on a particular flight.
That's actually a smart thing to do.
Well, okay, it's smart to some degree, but on the other hand, I think it's another case where it's going to cause more problems than it helps. But here are a couple of things that some people have been reporting happening. One is that on certain flights, people are now being prohibited from being out of their seats at all in the last hour of the flight.
Or
of having anything out on their lap, including like a paperback book or something like that. And then there have been rumors, unsubstantiated so far, that on certain flights in certain locations, they're going to be having even deeper restrictions on electronic devices of various sorts. And basically, again, this is, what is this going to accomplish? So this guy was trying to blow something up on landing. So you say, okay, you can't have anything on your...
It's going to make you feel warm and fuzzy, Sam. You're going to feel so warm and fuzzy about all of this. Oh, I can tell.
Oh, yes. Yes. He had the explosives packed into his underwear. So now, are we going to have underwear searches when you come in?
I think that Sam should be... I think your underwear should be checked every time you actually come in and out of any building, to be quite honest with
you. Well, I've heard a number of people say before, and, I'll just mirror it here. If you're serious about any of this, require everybody flying to fly naked.
Hey, I'm all for that. That's what it's... That's a plan. This is not be a bad thing. I'll tell you what, the last flight I took, which I came over from LAX to Miami. Yeah, that's the last plane I took. Imagine that, over a month ago. I don't travel anymore, Jesus. So James Caan was on the plane, okay? And he had he was on with some girl that was sitting right next to me. If that girl was naked on the flight, I would have been very happy. Okay, all right? Because that woman was so hot that we were all like, oh my God, who is this woman? I mean, it was like everybody, we were like, oh, jeez. And she was just James Caan. We're like, so yes, if that's a rule, I'm going to be like, okay, all right, I'm all for it. It's okay.
So, but look, yeah. The thing is that it looks like we're going to overreact again. Like, the restriction on, okay, you can't do various things in the last hour before flight, numerous people have pointed out, you think an actual terrorist isn't going to figure that out and say blow it up when they're taken off instead? Or some other time in the flight? Or going to be stopped at all? I mean, look, the thing that frustrates me the most about all of this crap is that As you've said before, I mean, 99.9% of all of this crap is just for show. It's to make people, like you said, feel warm and fuzzy. Oh my God, there's all these processes. That must mean I'm so damn safe. Now, the only really way to tell, as some people have pointed out, is to do sort of a controlled test where you have some flights with no security at all and compare how many of those get blown up compared to the ones with the security. But since we're not going to do that, the next best thing is probably a comparison with the safety rates for flights prior to all the safety measures being put on, starting way back before 9/11. Like, we really started ramping things up in the mid to late 70s.
I will tell you one thing. If you think about it, and of course, politics have changed and other things have changed, there have been a lot less hijackings in general, okay? And I will tell you that I'm doing this anecdotally thinking in my head, but I'm sure if we pull the data, it will back it up. Because airplane hijackings, I remember in the 80s and 90s, there was a lot of airplanes hijacked. Airplanes hijacked to Cuba, airplanes hijacked to this. You had that, what was it?
Of course,
African hijacking.
Of course,
you had a lot of Middle
difference.
Eastern.
there was that pre-9/11 difference where almost all of those hijackings, with some very notable exceptions, but ended essentially without incident. The hijackers would insist that the plane go somewhere and let them off, and the plane would. And like I said, there's been some notable exceptions, and 9/11 of course changed everybody's conception of what might happen at a hijacking. But there'd been a decrease in some things, and I think that would be a good before and after, you know, thing to look at, but there's so many other variables going on. I think the key here, though, is that we're chasing, you know, like it's like people are chasing the idea of a zero incident rate. Like what we want out of this is zero. And I don't think that's A, realistic, B, cost effective. I mean, you really have to, when you're looking at threats and deciding on a cost benefit basis what to throw your resources at, flying is already one of the safest methods of travel, even including terrorism. It should not be where we're putting resources. And yes, it's very spectacular.
But you see, the problem is,
the biggest air crashes, I mean, even on 9/11, when we had thousands of people die, I mean, you get the same number of people being killed in regular highway accidents in a couple weeks. I mean, maybe a little bit longer than that, but you know what I mean.
But listen to this. This is the one thing. You know, the Israelis have proven that it's more intelligence than anything else that prevents this kind of stuff happening, okay? All right? Taking, you know, analyzing intelligence and making good use of it. Okay. Now, the one thing about this guy, okay, you know, let's face it, his father.
Yeah. Actually, since that's
called embassy.
Let's take
to tell them.
Let's take a break and talk about that when we get back, because we're getting into a different aspect of things. We'll take a break. We'll be back in a moment, and we'll talk about warning signs and advanced stuff.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tell Motel.
From To People Who Sometimes Read, by Paige Taggart. My duplicating assertions are only for liars. I have told 52 men that I love them, but I've only meant it once. Maybe it's because I am in season this year, or that my willful interior has been zipped down and revealed inside out. It's likely that I have no history, that my traces have been erased along with the paper kept in my desk slot all through grade school. Those times I crawled in bark and didn't notice my knees scabbing, lifted my body, swung over the bars to test my flexibility as a trellis of attention. I keep flinging myself forward and falling upside down, which is partly why I do headstands every day, to reiterate stability. Certainty comes with eating lunch outside, surrounded by pine cones, and my certain love's hand in my lap.
For more like this, go to notellmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay, so as Yvonne was pointing out right before the break, we had warning about this guy.
Yes,
he was prohibited. He was prohibited
from his father.
He was prohibited from entering Britain, and was on apparently prohibited from entering a few other places.
But his father called the American embassy to warn him that his son had, you know, gotten some radical views that he might have traveled to Yemen, and you know. His visa, at least, should have been revoked at that moment.
Yeah, well,
at the very minimum.
I saw one humorist, and I'm going to forget the name, but who basically put, you know, look, the American government, you know, we can't take just one parent's word for it. Both parents have to call and tell us.
Oh, okay. Well, gee whiz. You know, at the very least, it should have taken an investigation. At the very least. Okay?
Well, you know, there have been a lot of criticisms of the no-fly list and stuff being excessive. But, you know, and there certainly are some cases where it was incredibly stupid where, you know, if you had the same name as somebody who was on the list for some reason, you'd be in trouble too.
Yes, but they are trying to make ways to correct that. As a matter of fact, they're working with the airlines, and I noticed this in my frequent traveler profile where you can get a redress number or something they give you that they correct that, and you could put that information there, and it clears that up so that doesn't happen again. I mean, they are trying to do things
right. But you know, and here's the thing: to defend folks for a little bit, do you want to have the bar for being put on a no-fly list or something like that? Simply that somebody has to call and say that they're suspicious of you. It needs to be more than that.
Okay.
Like you said, there probably should be some investigation, but then are you going to investigate every time
if
somebody calls?
And I call the police and I accuse my neighbor of planning a terrorist plot, of doing some kind of criminal act, the police will at least try to investigate and try to find out what the hell's going on. Okay?
Yeah,
at the bare minimum.
I can see that. I mean,
you know, if I call the Secret Service right now and I say that that my downstairs neighbor, I think he may be plotting to kill the president.
Somebody's going to give that guy a call.
Exactly. Okay. At the very least, I would expect. Okay, a guy who apparently had a very prominent position and was a former government official in the government calls up to say, you know, shit.
This isn't some random schlub off the street either.
No. Yeah. It goes and calls a concern that his son may have been radicalized into a terrorist, and it's a guy that has a U.S. visa, and which is the reason why he's calling. I would have, you know, at least you would think, I don't think that the Nigerian embassy is flooded with calls from concerned parents about their kids being terrorists.
Yeah.
You know, that would have at least prompted something more than just all they did was mark the visa file so there would be a full investigation if he ever reapplied for a visa. Gee whiz. So, you know, that's the thing that really pisses me off. And most of these incidents that we've had, even September 11th, we had intelligence that was picked up before that indicated something was amiss with some of these people. And the problem is that sometimes we just, you know, you get government officials that just don't take certain information seriously. I know that there's a lot of information flowing, but in some instances, for example, you know, this to me seemed like an obvious.
Here's the thing that we don't know here that would give the appropriate context here, is for each one of these where there's a report where there's something behind it, how many hundreds of reports do they get that's
sure.
nothing? And sure. And so it's very easy to get jaded on something or to not take them as seriously as you quote-unquote should. If, you know, for every one thing you have that it looks even remotely real, you have to wade through a couple of hundred of bullshit or even more. I mean, this is why, you know, people make fun of the TSA screeners and all of that for various reasons. But I mean, you know, the actual job kind of sucks, you know,
yeah.
Because every day you're scanning stuff that has nothing. It's
normal.
So
the problem is with the job of that scanner, let me tell you something. The job of these people sitting in front of a fucking scanner is the biggest bullshit job there is. Unless you put real technology to really scan and just – that thing should not be that somebody is looking at that machine and looking at it for hours straight looking at stuff. Unless you put real technology that actually detects stuff and just that person is not there as the scanner. It's just a person putting through the equipment and the technology actually points out to you something to look at. You know, otherwise it's just worthless. Okay, people just get tired, you know, they're looking at a screen, fuck, I'm sure you could pass through whatever the fuck you want, nobody's paying any attention.
Yeah.
So,
which gets us back to the whole, it's all useless and why do we even bother? But yeah, like, I, getting back to your other point, I think it has been shown time after time, the security at the airport and such, by the time the terrorists got to the airport, if they really want to do it, they'll figure out a way through. Okay.
Sure.
You know, it is the intelligence beforehand that has a chance of, you know, stopping these. Or again, you know, just suck it up and realize that you know, a few times a decade, somebody's going to blow up a plane. And, you know, it's a cost of doing business.
It's, and it's, but it's like, it's the same cost as, you know, look, Christmas Eve, unfortunately, my best friend down here in Florida, his father got killed in a car crash.
Oh, well, okay. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it's not great. In Buenos Aires, and but that is one of the risks that you have when you
get in a car,
travel by car. I mean, you know, it is part of it. I mean, you know, it's highly unlikely, yet it can happen.
And
you know, what I'm saying is,
thousands of times a day in the case of cars.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, that's part of it. And what I'm saying about the air travel, I think that we've, you know, look, do those measures, you know, for example, does the screening, the metal detectors do nothing? No, I will not say no, because there is it does provide a deterrent, and you know, there is a significant percentage of people who would get stopped for obvious reasons. It makes people have to be more wily, have to do more things, have to do whatever. Second layer, but you know, as the person on the plane that stopped the guy proved, second layer of security, you have the best one right now, is actually the actual passengers themselves.
Right. And you know, whatever you do for security sort of at the perimeter, there's always the move the attack back. I mean, like, it's rather obvious to point out that, you know, one of the easiest places to go kill a lot of people right now would be the damn security lines at the airport.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Because you haven't gone through security yet, so you can walk into the airport carrying an arsenal and just start shooting.
Just blow yourself up there.
Or blow
yourself
up for
some reason, I guess they don't think it's as spectacular or something, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, but that's the thing. Whenever you have a perimeter, you can always just push back a little bit past
it. But actually, that's not totally the case. I think if I remember correctly, wasn't there an incident, and I think it was in London?
Yeah, the guy tried to blow himself up at the airport.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, they've tried that too.
Well, you know, but if you're not in a confined space, the bomb's not always the best thing. You want to come in there blazing with your machine gun. But, you know, whatever.
they've done that too at airports, but, you know.
The point is, there is always a way. If there's someone who's determined to do it, there's always, always, always a way. So your best use of resources isn't always, you know, add another layer of screening to make sure nobody put on an oversized toothpaste container in their luggage, you know? No. And like, I'm sorry, sir, you can't read your book while we're landing. No, come on. Really? That kind of stuff just pisses me off so much. I mean, I don't fly very often, you know, and haven't for a long time. But, yeah, this is the kind of thing that makes me not want to. You know, it's like, it's such a pain in the ass to even think about it. You know, now, if I really had somebody to just go, would I go? Of course I would. But, you know, it makes me not want to. It makes me not think, you know, hey, you know what would be fun? Let's go fly to blah. No.
But to me, it is fun. You see, that's a problem. That's why I'm so surprised you haven't seen the promos for that movie I told you. But, you know, I must digress.
Okay.
Because unless you've seen them, it's just pointless.
We need to take another break. So. We'll be back with something different for our last segment.
Yes.
Your conference. expense account information.
Okay, Vaughn. So, we got a choice of topics for the last segment here. I'll give these to you real quick, and then you can tell me where you want to go with it. Things we talked about before, and please hold your answer till you have heard all six. There's six.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Healthcare. Iran. Apple tablet rumors. The fact that we're coming up on New Year's, and depending on how you count, a lot of people are doing end-of-decade retrospectives and stuff like that. The auto companies you had mentioned before we started. And finally, current movies. Should I, like, sing the Jeopardy theme now while you think?
Yeah, actually, you should.
You know, we'd probably have
to
play some
royalties. I'll take the Apple tablet for $500, Bob.
Apple tablet? Okay, so we talked.
Is it Bob's name? What's the name of the host of Jeopardy?
Alex.
No, Alex.
Alex.
Yes.
Anyway, a couple weeks ago, we'd actually talked a little bit about the new Google phone, and I got one comment on my blog from someone basically saying, ha, you know, our friend Greg. Unlocked phones, that's a great game changer. Ha! You know, and that's nothing. Don't tell me about your crappy network, not to mention the crappy UI on, and I'm paraphrasing here, crappy UI on the phones compared to the iPhone. And I actually answered on my blog, you know, look, the thing that I was mentioning might be a game changer, which I later said I did not think was likely this time around, was someone going completely data only and saying, screw the whole traditional voice thing. We're just going to go with a data only phone, and people can use VoIP if they want to do voice. I don't think that's happening here.
One thing. I was today at the mall, which, God, was such hell, but let me not go there right now. I went by a booth where they had cell phones, unlocked cell phones.
Yes.
Right? All sorts of different models. HTC, they had an unlocked Droid. They had a GSM unlocked Droid. Motorola Droid.
Yeah.
Okay? They had what the heck? They had some other Sony one that I had never seen. They had a Prada phone. They had all this stuff.
Right.
I'm sorry. These things did not sell well.
Yeah.
At all.
So, again,
and they are available.
Again, like I said, I don't think that's the game changing part of it. And the more I've heard about the Google phone, the less I'm convinced it's actually going to be all that wonderful. But, you know, now the rumors have moved on to the Apple tablet. Rumors are an announcement sometime in late January, most likely not for immediate release, but to let people know it's coming, probably a few months later. There, of course, have been Apple tablet rumors for years. The current rumors seem to be essentially sounding like a large format iPhone with like a 7 or 10 inch screen.
You know, I gotta tell you, I am so underwhelmed by a tablet. Maybe because I have one. I still have one. I have a tablet PC. I loaded Windows 7 on it. It actually works pretty better than Windows 7 and XP.
I think
but it is so underwhelming.
I think I had
a damn tablet, and I'm like, eh.
See, that has been the overwhelming response to tablet form things for years.
Yeah.
People get them, and then they're sort of like, eh, whatever. And here's the thing, though. I mean, and I'm not convinced it won't be this way again, but, you know, I think I've said before, if anybody has a chance of making it work, it's Apple. But I think they're doing a couple things that are potentially different here. First of all, where it sounds like, and this is all rumors, so who the hell knows what's really going to happen, but the rumors are basically that this is not going to be a full-fledged OS X, you know, Macintosh experience on a tablet. It is going to essentially be a larger screen iPhone, where it's going to be about the controlled environment. It's going to be about being a media player. It's going to be about surfing the web and watching movies.
How big does this thing become, really?
What was that?
I mean, how big does this thing become? Look, I have an iPhone, okay, now, and honestly, if this thing were twice as big, or three times as big, Exactly.
Well, and that's the thing, too. I mean, because basically what we're talking about, like, your rumors are like a 7-inch screen. So that's basically imagine your iPhone, like, twice as tall and twice as wide.
Well, I wouldn't carry that damn thing in my pocket all the time.
It wouldn't even fit in your pocket. It would be a briefcase
exactly.
device at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't carry it with me all the time.
So, or another way of looking at it is maybe something around the size of a Kindle or a Nook.
Well, I have not been really attracted to those devices.
Well, and see, the size is part of it. And so the question is going to be, what benefit does it give me that makes it worth the additional size? Because I think about all the things they say. Am I really going to sit there and pull it out to watch TV on or to watch
this is the
shows?
Problem.
I mean, like, I've done that a few times on my iPhone. Would making it bigger make me do that more often? I don't know. Now, surfing the web, okay, I could see, like, if you had mobile Safari and it was a little bit bigger.
But think about this. Okay. All right. Two things, right? So your options for size are, you see, the problem is that thing is this thing in between. Say, for example, you talk about it's too big to carry in your pocket, so it would have to be a briefcase item, right? And if you have a briefcase, then why the hell carry a half-assed laptop when you could carry a full laptop, a full ultralight laptop anyway?
Well, and okay. I think – well, this is – you know, there are all these people who are, you know, carrying around the whatchamacallit, the – what are those mini laptops called?
The mini notes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are people carrying around those things, and you know,
but there's only one. But why are they carrying them? There is only one selling point. They're stupidly cheap.
Well, the rumor is this thing's
because
be
they're $200 and some odd, and that's why they're buying them. Okay.
Well,
that's it.
Part of the rumors are that this thing is going to be stupidly cheap too.
I have this tough thinking that Apple is going to launch some really stupidly cheap thing. I mean, let's face it. A few people are figuring out if the iPhone was not subsidized as it is right now, you're talking about an $800 phone.
Well, but here's the question. Is this going to be a subsidized device with a wireless plan? And with a 3G plan of some sort?
Now, that would be the only way. I mean, the truth of the matter is, because if it's not, I mean, let's face it, if you've got, you know, this pricing conundrum, I mean, the same thing. I mean, I'm sorry, but I don't see how the heck you can make the Note to be really, I mean, significantly cheaper than how much it costs to make this the iPhone.
But now, this ties in, though, to what I was saying before in terms of, you know, if this was a data-only device subsidized with some sort of data-only plan, but with built-in apps available, you know, so you could do VoIP, you could do whatever, you do your web surfing. Basically, take an iPhone, scale it up, but add an always-on data connection, but without the voice stuff. I could see that being a useful device. I mean, like, for 90% of what I do, like, just when I'm wandering around with stuff, like I could see, like right now, if I stopped for coffee or something somewhere,
yeah.
Even if I have my phone and my laptop with me, I am much more likely to pull out the phone and sit there checking news or whatever.
The phone, yeah, you're right. I agree.
Pulling out the laptop, it's kind of a pain in the ass. You need more desk space, or you need to put it on your lap. It's bigger, you know. Have the battery goes away faster, so I'm thinking about plugging it in. So yeah, I could see that. Like if I'm surfing the web or something, I could definitely see, you know, a device that was basically a slightly scaled up iPhone being a very interesting device if it had
but
that.
But you're going to be carrying three devices? Seriously. That's my point.
Well, yeah, that's true. Like, and am I going to use this thing as a phone? No, probably not. You know,
no!
I can just see me carrying around my tablet and holding it up to my head to talk.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. I'm still having, you know,
See, this is one of the things I could see, like, when it come out saying, oh my god, that looks so incredibly cool, that looks cool, I must have one, I must have one. And then I stop and think about it and say, but when would I actually use it? What would I use that for? Or, you know, whatever. Or I could also imagine buying the damn thing and then leaving it at home more than I used it. Because, you know, most of the time my phone did what I needed it to. You know, I don't know. I mean, can I imagine some scenarios where it would be a nice thing to have, like a, you know, a scaled up iPhone kind of thing? Yes, I certainly can. And if it had like, you know, basically I keep thinking if you, iPod Touch plus 3G internet on all times, or WiMAX or something for that matter, that would be a pretty kick-ass device, and make it slightly bigger. I could see the thing where you just had, you have your choice of sizes. Maybe I don't carry around three devices, but maybe I decide, do I want the small, medium, or large version?
You know, I'll tell you one thing that I realized this week, that as I've been using the iPhone more, that to be quite honest with you, in this size form factor, if all you did was actually give me the ability to, I could use this even for like work or presentations. You know, I take a laptop and plug it in. If you actually gave this fucking thing video out.
It has video out.
Yeah, it has video out, but it's only video. It's not, say, display how you would present a PowerPoint in a presentation. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
It only lets you do video out, a standard, you know, TV video out. If you gave it that you could display, say, as you display your work, say, from your laptop into something else, how this would be, I mean, I could, in a lot of instances, you know, dispense with completely even carrying a laptop in many instances. And I don't really see the need so much for a bigger screen that is actually here. I would see more the need of sometimes I would like, fuck, you know what I'm saying? I'm thinking of, why don't we have a little docking station for the iPhone? If I carry this as my computer, I could put it right here and have a real keyboard and a display.
Yeah, I could see that. And somebody has, if you've got a jailbroken iPhone, you can connect it to a Bluetooth keyboard already. But anyway, you know, we are out of time. I think we will have to wait and see if and when Apple announces its iSlate or whatever the hell it's going to be. And see,
I think they're going to announce something, but I think it, you know what? I got to tell you one thing, that my feeling is that Apple will announce something in the next couple of months that is big, but was probably, as usual, will have no bearing whatsoever on this fucking speculation.
Well, you know, and this is the fundamental thing. And like I said, it's like there's a lot of challenges to make a tablet something useful. But if anybody can do it, I think Apple could do it. And I could see coming into that announcement and thinking that, oh, it's just going to be a scaled up iPhone. And then coming out of it saying, oh, that's what they're doing. I hadn't thought of that.
I can see that. I can definitely see that. What I can say is that, Like I said, I've looked at a lot of the speculation and the sketches, and I think that, geez, my thinking is this can't be it, because this is just shit. This is just shit. I mean, I don't know who the hell's going to use this crap. It's just shit.
Okay, so, well, with that, it's time to close up. I said all the other stuff about listening and telling your friends and emailing us at the beginning, so I won't say it again.
Thanks, you can say it again, because if they got to the end, you want them to rewind?
Why don't you say it, Yvonne?
Okay, please tell all your friends and buddies to listen. I mean, we like listeners. They're great. I don't know. The stats say that we have more listeners, but God only knows if there are actually any people listening. But let us know about it. You could write us an email at ablesmay@ablesmay.com and tell us any comments, news, notes, stuff you'd like to say, insult us, tell us we're idiots, whatever. You know,
that's the usual comments we get, of course.
We're good-natured about it. Something stupid we said. Absolutely. And you know, hell, we know that we're stupid, so we're not going to be, you know, we're not going to argue too much. Okay.
That's right.
All right.
And so thank you everybody. And by the next show, it will be 2010. So,
Shit.
Exactly. So
did we fly to Jupiter?
Something like that. Something like that. I got my flying car. I wear a jumpsuit to work every day. You know.
Yes. Well, actually, today I was at Nordstrom, and Dad grabbed a couple of Dolce & Gabbana sneakers that looked perfect for that space flight.
Well, there you go. So thanks, everyone, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Happy holidays for the ones that have passed, and happy new year for the one coming up. And talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.